something that could be explained, only experienced. How sad an indictment against so many that they couldn't have faith in others to know just how solid such honesty was, that their hearts were so corrupt that they refused to believe creatures like Zev and him were above their pettiness, yet they were. And so they were forced into hiding, forced into lies they didn't want to live or tell. Not because they were wrong, or they couldn't be trusted, because others refused to see the good inside them, because others refused to believe the goodness inside them. Since they lacked it themselves, they refused to see it in anyone else. But denying it didn't kill it. It just made it all the more special and rare. And for that reason, Jared had made a deal with the source of all evil to spare his grandfather's life, and Jaden had enslaved himself in an effort to save Jared so that he wouldn't be killed along with his army. Both betrayed by the gods they'd trusted to deal fairly with them. And Myonne had paid dearest of all. She'd lost everything in the end. Her son, her husband, and her life. For that, Nick could weep for them all. Now the Sephiroth warrior stood before him, her scarlet cape draped around a lithe, armored body. It was held back in places from her shoulders by a quiver of arrows and a gilded sword belt. "I know you," Nick breathed. Indeed, she was a hard one to miss, with her gold-kissed skin and shining gold wings. Her braided black hair reflected blue in the dim light. Every exquisite feature was perfection. No wonder Zev had been willing to die for her, that he'd suffered a fate worse than death to protect her and their son, when he'd stepped aside and allowed her to marry his father and pretend that his child belonged to his father so that no one would ever suspect the truth. That was the purest form of altruism and love. Not once had Zev ever breathed a word of it for fear of causing either his ex-wife or child harm. Nick couldn't imagine the pain and agony Zev had known every day of his life, and he was grateful for that. Without a word, Myonne watched him curiously. Her shining gold vambraces held an ornate design that designated her as the leader of her Sephirii brethren, their Kira, as did the epaulets of her uniform. She carried herself like a fierce warrior, even though she was all feminine grace. The only piece of jewelry on her body was an out-of-place masculine necklace, one Nick knew belonged to Zev, and only because it was a match for the one Zev wore that symbolized her dainty feathered Sephiroth wing, unlike her roughened bat-shaped demon piece. How odd that no one had ever realized what those two necklaces meant, and why the two of them wore them. Her lips trembled as she approached Nick.
"You are the only one who has been kind to my dairy. For that I can't thank you enough."
It took him a second to remember that Zev's real name was Darazerxes, especially since Zev never used it. Yeah, I guess. A tear fell down her cheek.
"You are not as the others of your kind."
"That's what they tell me," she smiled sadly.
"And they would be right. Do you know where we are?"
Not a friggin' clue, she laughed.
"It is a place that never was. A land of where there can never be. Neither here nor there. It's where we're sent to bleed."
Dang, she was starting to sound like Nashira now. Made him almost want to reach for his grimoire to see if he'd left it at home. "That makes no sense whatsoever."
"You're the Malachi, Nick. You know all things. Just look inside and trust in yourself. The answers you seek are already there. You know them. You just don't want to face them. It doesn't matter how many polls you take or friends you ask. The answers never change. They're already in your heart. You just need to believe in the truth. Believe in yourself. Have confidence.
That was easier said than done. He was too used to being told he didn't have enough experience, enough sense, that he was too young to have a clue about anything. Now she was telling him to trust an instinct he doubted. It was as confusing as his mother teaching him to walk and talk, and then the moment he started asking questions about things she didn't want to answer, telling him to sit down and shut up. Life. It really needed to come with some kind of instruction booklet, or at least a help manual, because most days it just baffled the crap out of him. And before he could get a handle on it, a Zeitjager appeared to his left. Nick's eyes widened at the creepy plague doctor whose bandages were covered in blood. He held his hands up at the creature as it eyed him suspiciously. "Hey, bruh, not the one who broke your time sequence. You're sniffing up the wrong Malachi here." He gestured off to the side. "Head that way. Over there. Off you go. Go on. Find the other dude." Instead, it approached him, slowly. Fantastic. Just what he wanted for Christmas, along with the head injury and thorough degutting. Nick didn't move, but he did eye the grisly adamantine sickle the beast carried, because that was just gooey and gross. He could have done without the bloody stage theatrics. "You know, I heard Ozzy was in town looking for some new backup singers. You might want to try out." Nick's voice trailed off as the creature gave him a menacing glare that said he wasn't amused. Never mind. Cocking its head, it studied Nick even more intently. Nick studied him back with the same level of intensity, but this time he wasn't afraid of the creature. He was beginning to understand it. They weren't enemies, nor were they allies. He wasn't really sure what they were, at least not until the thing finally spoke in a chilling, broken voice.
"Cyprian is after you."
The Zeitjager's voice was brittle and harsh, like an old man who'd smoked too many packs of cigarettes. "Pardon?"
"He has fractured this time and will destroy it. You have to reset it."
"How?" The Zeitjager opened his hand and manifested a glowing skull in his palm. It wasn't quite human, but rather demonic in nature, with tusks that protruded over the jaw toward the eye sockets. Nick knew instinctively that it belonged to Monocribos. Though how the Zeitjager had come into possession of it, he wasn't really sure he wanted to know.
"You will know what to do when the time comes."
"Y'all keep saying things like that, but really? I'm about as useful as the G in lasagna." It made a peculiar noise that some might consider a laugh. Nick wasn't sure.
"Reset the sequence and reclaim your fate. You are the Malachi."
Nick wasn't so sure about that. "And if my fate is to destroy the world?"
"Have you so little faith in yourself?"
He had a point. Nick took the skull. It had an odd warmth to it, one that didn't make a lot of sense. Does Cyprian have to be born? If he could stop that, it seemed like the easiest fix. The Zeitjager hedged a bit.
"Perhaps. But the real question is, does he have to hate you when he's born?"
Nick hesitated, as that opened up a whole realm he hadn't even considered. His mind whirled with entirely new prospects. "You're saying that I can save him?" But that didn't make sense. There could only be one Malachi, right?
The future is never set in motion. It changes with every decision we make. Until the day you die, it is ever in flux. Pith's point or not.
And with that he vanished. Stunned, Nick turned to stare at Myonnie. His breath caught as two images went through his head simultaneously. One was of Zev with Myonnie. It was a tender embrace, with him standing behind her, holding her close in the shadows of her ancient balcony. Both dressed in their battle armor, it was a stolen moment, and the expression on their faces seared him with the depth of how much they loved each other, with the fact that they both knew what they had couldn't last, and that if anyone found out, it would end them both. Even so, they had forged a love that still haunted them, one that continued to burn inside Zev against all odds and all enemies, against all punishments. Society be danged. The second image was of the two of them on a battlefield, riddled with arrows and wounds, both of them dying, weeping. Myonnie had held Zev against her while he, weakened by blood loss, had tried to wipe the blood from her face. Rather than allowing him to die at peace with his love, his enemies had seized him from her arms and dragged him away, even as the life had faded from her eyes. She'd been left to die alone on the battlefield. Zev's fate had been far crueler. They denied him the release of death, and enslaved and tortured him for all eternity, because he dared to fall in love. Forced to live without her, and to serve the ones who'd caused her death. No chance to reunite in spirit with his love, no chance to help his son, or to spare either of them from their own damnation. Zev had been sold by his own father into an eternity of torture, a blood slave to the Malachi and to whatever demons the Malachi chose to feed him to. In that moment, Nick felt even more horrible for the two of them. "I'm sorry, Myonnie."
"For what?"
"For what was done to you, and to Zev, and Jared." A sad smile curved her lips before she walked toward Nick.
"It's all right, Nicholas. We couldn't have asked for a more beautiful great-grandson. And I'm glad to meet you."
And with that, she kissed his cheek and vanished. Nick couldn't breathe as his own tears choked him. He'd never met his grandparents before, never mind his great-grandparents. Therefore, he'd never dreamed of what his great-grandparents would be like to have finally met her. His Malachi wings shot out of his back against his will, but instead of being their usual black color, they were as gold as Myonnie's had been. Confused, he stared at them, wishing someone was here to explain that to him. "What's happening to me? Why was he having these visions? Were they real? Had he fallen down a real rabbit hole, or worse, had he drank some of that water? It was possible some had gone into his mouth. He still didn't know what had been in that bottle. What the heck is going on?" Worse, the peculiar rustling began again, only this time he had a weird inkling about what was causing it. No, it couldn't be. Tilting his head back, he glanced up at the oddly colored sky and listened closely. The off landscape tilted again, and the whispering voices echoed.
"Using your mind."
Was he? Because what he was beginning to suspect would make an awful lot of sense. And yet, Nick held his hand up and poked at the air. It sizzled. Oh yeah, that wasn't normal. Even in his screwed-up existence. Swallowing hard, he reached into his pocket and pulled out his hematite pendulum.
"Please, let me be wrong."
Yet knowing he wasn't, he pricked his finger and drew a bead of blood. He held his breath and then drew with it. Instead of falling on the ground, as it should have, the air absorbed it, and it glowed as bright as the lights on Takeshi's grid. More than anything, that confirmed Nick's suspicions. He was right. Somehow, some way, he'd been sucked into his own grimoire. Chapter 8. Nick gaped as he watched his blood glowing. It formed intricate sigils all around him in the air, hovering and dancing, reforming into intricate designs. And to think, his mom had once blistered his butt for painting on the walls at home. She'd have a fit if she ever saw this.
Well, ain't this the thing?
Now the question was, how had he gotten here? More importantly, how did he go about getting out? Last thing he wanted was to be stuck in this book forever, like someone else he knew. His stomach drew up tight at the thought. Yeah, that really was the last thing he needed, to be stuck in here a few thousand centuries, like her.
Nashira!
She didn't answer. Not that he really expected it. Even when she'd been trapped in the book like this, she'd been less than forthcoming with information, and not always swift to answer his summons. But at least he knew his blood was still relatively powerful here, and that it could continue to perform spells and sigils. That at least explained why he was able to channel the things he'd been channeling, and have some of these less-than-fun delusions. The book allowed him to see his past and a part of his future. It was a guidebook of sorts, so this was all beginning to make a little bit of sense to him now. Yeah, it was a guidebook that had been passed down through generations, from one Malachi to another. Dad. That one word left his lips before he could stop it.
What are you doing, Nick? Your father hated you. Have you lost your mind?
Maybe. But his dad had also given his life for them. So maybe, just maybe, he wasn't a total lunatic for thinking his dad might help him now. Maybe. After all, his dad loved his mother. Maybe that love would overcome Adarian's innate hatred of him. Miracles were possible. Nick stood in indecision for several minutes before he decided to take a chance he prayed didn't come back and bite him on the butt, like they normally did. 'Cause out of all the idiotic ideas he'd had over the years, this was the granddaddy boss leader.
Power up, bruh.
Closing his eyes, he summoned what little was left of his strength.
What have you done now?
Yeah, he'd know that deep, guttural, hate-filled tone anywhere. Good to see you too, Dad. Adarian materialized so that he could stand there with malevolent red eyes that seared him to the core of his rotten soul.
Didn't I tell you to watch your mother?
You did, and I'm trying.
Then why are you trapped here? Where you can't help her, huh?
I wish I knew. Hissing, Adarian took a step forward, then froze. He cocked his head, as if he heard something strange.
You have no idea what you're doing, do you?
That was one massive understatement of fact. Of course he didn't, never had, and at this point he'd wager that he never would. At least the odds were looking that way. Was hoping you'd have some idea on that? I'm thinking we're in the Malachi's grimoire, am I right? With a dark scowl, Adarian held his hand up to glare at it, as if it were some foreign object.
How is this even possible?
Again, clueless. Was hoping you could enlighten me as to what would suck me in here. Adarian grabbed him by his arm and yanked him up against his chest, then flew with him up toward the sky. Nick started to protest, but he was too weak to break his father's hold. Something that really concerned him.
Hey!
Stop struggling!
Normally, he'd never obey anyone who held him like this. Yet there was a note in his father's voice that said he needed to listen. And when they reached the outer edge of the paper, Nick saw why. There was a thin membrane that allowed him to see through the worlds in a way he'd have never thought possible. Similar to Takeshi's map, this was like a star chart to the multiverse. Nick gaped, as he tried to make sense of it all.
What is this?
Everything.
His father's wings flapped loudly in his ears, rushing a cold wind around them. I don't understand.
The grimoire is the lifeblood of our species, boy. It's all and nothing. What is and was and could be, the darkest of magic. It was forged from the living skin cells of Cam by Lilith during the Primus Bellum, and given to Monocribos so that he could defeat the Colossum.
Nick groaned in frustration as he tried to follow that, but it still didn't make sense. You've still lost me on this one, old man. Hissing, he spoke to Nick through gritted fangs.
The grimoire is a living book, you imbecile. Made from the flesh of Lilith's sister. She hated her siblings for what they'd done to her and her children, for the curse they placed on her that turned her children into monsters. So our book was her revenge on them. Since her children couldn't attack the source and lacked the ability to kill them, she was hoping the first Malachi would use her knowledge and its powers against her siblings to destroy them for her.
Why didn't he?
He never had the chance.
Adarian pulled Nick to a page where a pair of lips were imprinted on the ancient vellum.
Before Monocribos could use it against them, Cam had Rubati place a note to her husband in the book and seal her letter with a bit of her blood that binds her to it. It's part of her, too. After that, he couldn't bring himself to destroy this bit of her being. Like you, it now contains a balance between them. And so it has become our guide. A conscience of sorts for our species that confuses more than it helps. It's Rubati's pure soul that keeps us from using the book's knowledge to destroy the world. It's also why we have to keep it near us. Why we can't be without the cursed thing.
Is that why you put Nashira in it?
He nodded. I was hoping her hatred of me would override Rubati's spell and allow me to either destroy the book or use it as it was intended. Instead, she only vexed me more.
He shoved at Nick.
Like you.
Adarian sneered the word. Yet this time Nick felt the love that undercut his father's derision. So how do I save Mom? Please, you have to help me figure out a way to do it. Sadness darkened Adarian's eyes, turning them orange.
Have you seen that night?
Nick shook his head. I can't.
It's not what you think, and it's not what you know.
He scowled at his father's cryptic words. For the love of God, can you not tell me a straight answer? What is that supposed to mean? Adarian roared in anger. His breathing labored. He grabbed Nick's shoulders and forced him to meet his gaze.
If you want to fix this, forget what you think you know about your life and the future, moron. Find Cyprian before he finds you and stop him. It's that simple.
How?
The same way your mother saved you, Nick. No child is born rotten. No matter what they say, we all come into this world the same, cold and hungry, seeking warmth and comfort, every last one of us. We're snatched out into this madness, dazed and confused, and all we want is for someone to hold us and tell us that it's going to be okay. A steady hand to keep us from falling. You were lucky that you found one that held you instead of slapping you at every turn.
Nick scowled at his father as he realized for the first time the difference between them. While his mother had wrapped him up in her love and held him close to protect him from the world, his father had been shunned and left to fend for himself, with no mother to care what happened to him. Nobody had ever protected Adarian, not once. Rather, they'd all taken turns abusing and using him until he'd become the very monster he'd been foretold by destiny. I'm sorry, he growled at Nick.
I don't want your pity, boy.
That's not what I'm giving you, old man. Nick swallowed hard as the full tragedy of his father's life hit him square in the chest. Adarian couldn't even recognize what it was he was offering him. He had absolutely no concept of it, couldn't even recognize what was right in front of his face. And that burned Nick most. In spite of it all, in spite of you, you worthless piece of dung, I do love you, Dad. I just wanted you to know it. You weren't much. But you were my father. The only one I'll ever have. And before he could stop himself, he hugged him. At first he thought Adarian was going to throw him against something, but instead he fisted his hand in Nick's hair and held him tight to his chest.
You ever tell anyone about this and I'll rip out your throat.
Nick laughed at a very typical Adarian reaction. Don't worry. No one would believe it anyway. Not even Nick really believed it. Maybe all of this was some hallucination. Maybe he was dead already. That would explain it. But even so, he savored this one rare instance of being held by the man who'd fathered him. Even if he wasn't really a man.
You can't choose your father. You can only choose how you deal with him.
Nick was at peace with Adarian for the first time in his life. He finally understood his mother's way of thinking and how it was that she managed to live the way she did. No wonder her soul was so beautiful. If only his was. But then that, too, was a choice. Try as he might, he still wasn't a creature of forgiveness. He had a monster to stop, one who was determined to ruin him. One who was out there right now, plotting against him and his friends and family. How do I get out of this book?
How did you get into it?
Nick snorted. Like I know. It's why I asked you here. I was hoping for some insight.
Then you'd best be figuring it out.
Well, you're just all kinds of unhelpful, aren't you? Nick rolled his eyes as he did his best to think of something, anything. Sadly, nothing came to mind. How could this be? He needed real help, and he had no idea where his help was or how to find it. He was about as lost as he'd ever been in his life. Where's Nick? Caleb turned toward Cody. I don't know. He was supposed to be at the station with his mother. She said he left to go do homework, and no one's seen him since.
I get a bad feeling about this.
Aaron glanced up at the darkening sky over their heads. While storm clouds in New Orleans were nothing new, there was something ominous with these. Low-hanging and jet-black, they seemed a bit denser and more threatening than normal. Not quite a natural phenomenon. Cody nodded. I hear you. Especially since I know Nick didn't have homework, and he doesn't normally do any without a great deal of protesting.
And whining, Caleb added. Let's not forget the painful whining.
Cody scowled as a deep rumble sounded. What exactly does a Sephirii army look like when it attacks? A tick started in Caleb's handsome cheek.
Honestly? A lot like that.
He jerked his chin toward the storm clouds as he subconsciously rubbed his stomach where he'd been wounded earlier.
Aaron? I see it, demon. Me hackles are up. Vaughn! He shouted. Kaziel!
Instantly his companions materialized by his side and took up defensive positions, as they knew that whenever he called for them in such a manner, it usually meant that danger was approaching fast. And their appearance, like that, probably wasn't the best thing for an afternoon in a crowded tourist town. But they were lucky enough that no one was paying attention to them. Rather, they were all focused on the crackling electricity in the air and seeking shelter from a storm that sounded deadly. Threatening. In human form, Kaziel dwarfed Cody. His long, pale blonde hair framed a beautiful face that was marked with Celtic symbols for protection. Trained by the Lady Shadow herself, the goddess Siathach, he was the fiercest of the Battlecorn ever unleashed in war, and his pale green eyes showed the depth of his skills and the tragedy that had been his harsh, tragic life. As part of the infamous Ursuun Gandrindod, the terror by a trinity that consisted of him, Aaron, and Vaughn, Khazeel was legendary in Celtic lore. Likewise, Vaughn was ever as ready and eager to do battle. But then the Ravun Du, dark passionate one, was known for his love of all things deadly. Hence his current curse that had resulted in him being cast into the body of a woman. Because of his unrequited love for her, the sorceress had killed herself, and with her dying breath, had made it so that Vaughn would be forced to spend eternity in her body, lamenting the fact that he'd never once paid attention to her. Now, he was forced to walk the earth as a female wraith, who warned those about to die of their coming doom. Tall and thin, with stringy red hair and dark eyes and lips, he was pretty enough as a woman, which irritated him to no end, as men constantly came on to him, and he had no interest whatsoever in male attention. And why Khazeel had an open sun tattooed on his forehead that aligned him to the light Celtic powers, Vaughn held the tattoo of a black elongated star between his eyes that marked him firmly as belonging to the darker fey side. Indeed, the sorcerer preferred to play with the deadliest of magic, and had been known in his day to delve into things best left undisturbed, things such as necromancy and death magic. Aaron swore loyalty to both sides and neither. It was what had made the three of them virtually invincible in their time, an unstoppable army of three no one had wanted to face in war. Cody was glad to have them on her team. Even though they were weakened by curses and binding spells, they were still formidable and terrifying. That lethal combination and their ability to remain calm and amused, no matter the threat, reminded her of her brothers. It also made her homesick at times. "So," Khazeel passed an irritated smirk toward Caleb, "who's taking odds on Shadow not finding them swords anytime soon?" Caleb scoffed. "Oh, I'm taking odds on them being found, in my back or gullet again, possibly my head, or another extremely uncomfortable body part, at the worst possible time." Aaron snorted. "Have to say I'm in agreement with that, knowing our luck as I do." "Aye to that," Vaughn was braiding his hair so as to keep it from his eyes, or her eyes, rather. It was ever confusing as to how to refer to him, as Cody was never quite sure, given his situation. Luckily, he was forgiving when it came to his gender, and only took offense whenever someone intended to offend him about it. And for the first time, Cody considered how long the three of them had known each other and battled together. Nigh an eternity. Brothers in arms. They would die before they failed each other. Die rather than betray. And bleed for each other without hesitation or faltering. Everyone should have a friend like that. It was a sad testament to the world that there were so few who did, especially given the fact that they'd come together through adversity and from vastly different backgrounds. Indeed, Vaughn, Aaron, and Khazeel should be mortal enemies. Instead, they were bonded tighter than most families. Vaughn paused to scowl at her. "You're right there, lass." Cody smiled. "Fine. At least as much as I can be, given the unrivaled beauty of this particular day." Her tone dripped with her intended sarcasm. "Truth to that. Me gape and wound be throbbing already. Can't wait for the next one to join it." Khazeel snorted as he moved to stand nearer to Vaughn. "No worries, mate. I'll be tearing the throat of the next one what comes at you." Caleb's gaze darkened. "We need to find our Malachi. I'm thinking this portends something foul." Aaron cast a droll stare toward Caleb. "What are you, mad demon? I'm thinking this portends something ate our Malachi. Why else would he be missing?" Khazeel nodded. "Agreed. He'd be in the belly of some beast most foul." As much as Cody hated to admit it, they might be right, because deep inside, she couldn't feel Nick either. "Caleb, can you contact him?" The expression on his face confirmed her bitterest fears. "He's not on this plane, is he?" Caleb swallowed hard.
No, may the gods help us. I think Noir has him.
And if he did, this world was doomed. Chapter 9. Closing his eyes, Nick felt himself falling through the ether. He was so lost to the grimoire now, to the power of it, and to his past and future. All at once in his mind, he saw the lives of every Malachi. It filled him with so much anger and hatred that it was explosive, and at the same time, it saddened him that this was what his lineage had been left with. Why? Because of a war they hadn't started? Because two people had loved each other and it had angered others? How could so much tragedy come from something so simple and basic, something so innocent and good? It staggered his mind. Mona Kribos' father, Kisare, had been a Sephiroth of unquestionable loyalty and supreme power. The Kirai of the Mimaru, their top leader before Myani. He alone had given a heart to the darkest of all the gods, and taught her to love and care for something other than herself, just as Myani had done for Zev. No wonder the two of them had been so scared and paranoid. They had already seen how this played out. If the Source Powers had been so cruel to their own over it, then they had held no hope for themselves. Nick couldn't blame his great-grandparents at all. Before time began, Kisare had been so pure of heart that he'd been chosen by the sword spirit Takara as the first of the Sephirii to wield her in battle. And after Kisare's unjust death, the gods had demanded, because she'd dared to fall in love with the goddess Braith, who had outed their relationship when she'd birthed their son, Mona Kribos. Takara had refused to serve another warrior. The sword had taken a stand for the couple and the injustice done to them. For centuries, the sword had lain dormant, willfully silent, refusing all the Sephirii who attempted to activate and use her. Until Jared, Nick's maternal grandfather. How ironic, really. It made him wonder if Takara had known that Jared would be the last Sephiroth whose life would be bound to the final Malachi. That the sword had chosen her war partner intentionally, with full knowledge that Jared would be used in the future for such a nefarious scheme by the very gods who'd first cursed Nick's lineage. As it begins, so it ends. Everything seemed to move in such cycles. In his mind, Nick heard Jared's anguished shout in the past as Takara had been ripped from his hand, and he'd been punished for trying to spare Jaden from his siblings. He heard Takara's own cries of misery when she'd been forcibly pried from his grasp. Whenever a Sephiroth bonded with his or her sword, their partnership was indivisible and eternal. To lose one was like having a limb ripped from the body. Like Zev's wings being cut from his back. Nick choked in sympathetic pain for them both. Even though they were technically enemies, they were also family.
We are destruction. That is our birthright.
Nick drew up short at the feminine voice in his ear. Who are you? Out of the ether of the grimoire appeared a haunting face. Paler than frost, with eyes of mercury, she reminded him of Acheron and Styx, ethereally beautiful. She was fragile in her grace, and yet there was a power to her that charged the air around him. It ran through his body, causing every molecule of his being to stand up and take note of it. Without being told, he knew this was Braith. Renamed Apollome by Kisare, who refused to call her something that symbolized the shrieking cold wind that had birthed her when chaos and order had first spun together to create her. The Sephiroth had come up with a name that meant the warmth and beauty she signified for him. He would never see her as anything else. Not even when they tortured him for his love of her. "So you're Acheron's mother." The words were out before Nick could stop them. Her swirling silver eyes turned red as her white blonde hair flared out as if she'd attack. Nick braced himself, but something calmed her down.
"You're the friend of my Apostolos."
That was the name she'd given Asheron on his birth.
"I am." Her gaze softened. "And you're of my bloodline, distantly. He must have sensed that in you."
She walked a small circle around Nick.
"It's probably why he trusted you, when it's not in his nature to do so."
That was Nick's take on it, anyway. Yet as she continued to walk her circle around him, a peculiar sensation went through Nick, one that was unmistakable and draining.
"You're not Apollyme!" He backed away from the fake goddess. "Who are you?"
Laughter echoed around him. It sent chills over his body. Hallucinating was one thing, but why this? Why her?
"You know why."
He turned to find the other Malachi behind him.
"I'm not going to let you destroy everything. You know that. It's not in me."
Cyprian laughed.
"You can't stop it. It's already happened. There's nothing you can do. I've already gotten away with it."
"Then why are you here?" Nick smirked, wishing he felt as cocky as he pretended to be. "You think I don't know the fear I see in your eyes?"
"Yeah, I see your fear, boy. I can smell it."
Not exactly true, but bluster seemed like a good move right now. Yeah, that was usually a safe go-to when dealing with anyone other than teachers, his mother, Caleb, Cody, or Bubba. They would normally kick his butt for copying this attitude. Others, however, were normally confused by it. Or, in the case of Cyprian, taken down a peg. Because they weren't sure if Nick was bluffing or not. This was the only lie he was capable of pulling off with a straight face. Anything else, and he was screwed. For some reason, this one he could do. Strutting, he moved closer in to eyeball Cyprian. "What's the matter, demon boy? Can't find your tongue? Or your backbone?" That went a little too far, as it caused the fire to return to his eyes. He reached for Nick and grabbed him by his ugly Hawaiian shirt.
"I fear nothing!"
Yeah, they were related, definitely. Nick needed to remember that, as being called out for cowardice was his bitch switch too, and it never failed to make him extremely suicidal. Apparently that little acorn had fallen straight from the limb, hit the ground, and dug its nubby little thorn in deep to the soil so as not to budge from its parent tree at all. Consider him worked, and learned on that one. However, it also gave Nick a little more insight than old Cyprian meant for him to have. "You fear the future as much as I do. Why else would you be here, huh? What happens that it drives you back to babysit dear old dad? Who broke what?" He arched a goading brow at the demon. "Come on, be honest. Bubba or Mark? You weren't dumb enough to leave them unsupervised with something important, were you?"
"They're both dead, you fool."
Nick took that news like a sucker punch. He literally felt it knock all the wind from his chest.
"What?" "It's true. They both go down protecting you. Did you miss that memo, old man?"
Yeah, he had. But as soon as Cyprian spoke, he saw their deaths so clearly. Worse, he saw his mother's grief, heard her screams as she learned about Bubba, and took the news the same way she'd taken it when her sister had died. Hard and personal. It all but destroyed her. And that was the one thing Nick could never stand, seeing his mom in any kind of pain. Roaring, Nick grabbed Cyprian and shoved him back.
"What did I do to make you hate me so much?" "You had everything I wanted," he growled. "They all loved you, and I had nothing, nothing! They couldn't even look at me without disgust and hatred."
Nick was as shocked by those unexpected words as Cyprian appeared to be. Stunned, he stared into the demon's face that bore no semblance to his. Of course, a lot of that had to do with the fact that he didn't appear human at the moment, either. Even so, his red eyes were filled with anguish.
"I hate you. For all that I never was and will never
be.
Nick winced at the sincerity of those words, wishing he could fix this. While he now knew how Cyprian came into being, there was still one important piece he didn't have. One piece he needed to fix this. Who's your mother? Cyprian laughed in his face.
You'll find out.
Then it's not Cody. It was a stupid question, given what he'd seen about the future. He knew it couldn't be her. But he had to have some confirmation to go on right now. And anything, even something ridiculous, was better than nothing. Hissing, Cyprian went for Nick's throat. Nick barely got out of the way. Yo, psycho nut, stop and talk! Why you gotta be so violent? Aside from the obvious reason that he was a Malachi and it was their nature. When Cyprian went to punch him, Nick ducked and caught him a blow that caused him to stagger back. He then kicked him, twisted, and went to grab him. In an impressive move, Cyprian swept to the side and came up behind Nick to wrap his arms around his chest. He held him incapacitated.
Have you any idea how hard it is for me not to rip open your throat and bleed you out at my feet?
Dude! You need some serious counseling and professional help and anger management. At least let me lick your seatbelts and date your sister before you harbor this much animosity for me. Jeez, what'd I do? Use all your data plan? Spike your kid's bottle with some Red Bull and give him ring pops for your favorite white sofa? Back over your petunias and not leave a note? Cyprian moved to make good on his threat to kill Nick. The instant he did, Grimm appeared and grabbed his hand to stop it from happening. His face was twisted into a grimace of fury as he backhanded Cyprian with enough force to knock him several feet away. Stunned into a practical coma, Nick didn't move. He wasn't sure what part he reacted to most, that Grimm was here? That he dared to attack another Malachi? Or that he was defending him? 'Cause the last time they'd been together, Grimm had threatened to see Nick in his grave and to dance and whiz on it, all while laughing and stabbing at him. Yeah, this made the least amount of sense out of all this insane madness. Grimm glared at Cyprian.
Kill him now, fool, and you'll end your own existence.
Cyprian wiped at the blood on his lips, his breathing ragged. He glared at them both with an insanity that said he really didn't care. It was almost enough to put some fear in Nick's spine, but his Cajun grit caught it before it could take root and sent it back down to the bowels of his mind so that it couldn't interfere with his better sense, as if anything could ever give him some common sense. And true to form, Nick jutted his chin to goad Cyprian and Grimm both. Come on, boy. Come get some. He let his wings out and his own Malachi form take over. Though, to be honest, he had a bad feeling. He was looking a bit wilted, and not up to his usual fearsome self. Grimm scoffed at his bravado. Not exactly the reaction Nick was going for. It actually kind of stung his ego and hurt his feelings, and it made him eternally glad that Cody wasn't here to see it, doubly glad that neither Caleb nor Aaron witnessed the humiliation. Hard enough to look tough without his boys witnessing him getting dissed by the designer douche in bad clothes and knockoff Halloween gear. But he couldn't help that, and none of it was enough to make him back down. Throwing his hand out, Grimm used his powers to pin Nick to the wall behind him.
You need to return to being the useless, snot-nosed, smart-mouthed gutter snipe who was hustling tourists and hanging out with your loser friends after school. Now be a good boy, and drink your water.
Shaking his head at Grimm, Nick tried his best to push against him with his own powers. He cursed silently as they continued to fail him.
Aha, Grimmy baby, why would I start pleasing you now when we both know nothing makes me happier than to give you IBS?
Let's just cage him,
Cyprian flapped his own wings.
He has things he has to do for the future to play out the way we need it to. Then let me take his place. I know what needs to be done to set the future straight.
Nick went cold. Grimm started to curl his lip, then paused. He slowly arched a brow as if he were actually considering it.
Nick began to panic at the thought. Surely they couldn't do that and get away with it. No one would fall for such a trick. Anyone could see through a fake copy. No one could be so stupid. Ah, bullcrap, that loser can't pull it off. Ain't nobody me but me. My mama would know in an instant if he walked nearer. And still Grim stroked his chin.
You know, you might be on to the solution, finally. You pulled it off once. Why not? Not even Asheron could tell you apart. Or Nerea.
Cyprian sneered at Nick. Who says we need him here at all in the book?
Lock him up. Feed him to the demons and weaken Noir even more.
A twofer. I like that even more. Grim nodded.
All right. Let's do it.
Nick opened his mouth to protest. But it was too late. They already had him caged.
Chapter 10.
Hi, Miss Cody. It's so good to see you. You're always so pretty and posh, like a little angel from heaven. So how are you tonight?
Cody smiled at the beautiful waitress as she came over to her table and set a glass of water down in front of her.
Fine, Miss Gaucher. I'm supposed to meet Nick and do some homework. Is he in back, playing pool with Ren again? Or did Remy chase him upstairs to hide out with Alex?
Barely past 30, Nick's mom was a tiny woman. Dressed in the black sanctuary staff t-shirt and jeans, she had her long blonde hair pulled back into a ponytail. Frowning, she glanced around the sparse Tuesday evening crowd.
Actually, he's not here, Shug.
She pulled her phone from her apron pocket to check for messages.
He hasn't called in, either. We didn't like him. What time did he say he'd be here?
7. Charisse screwed her face up.
It's not like him to be late. Never mind a whole 15 minutes, especially not with you. Weird. And I know he's not over at Michael's tonight. Him and Mark are gearing up for another go at their zombie survival apocalypse stew, and Nick's terrified they'll make him taste it for them. He should have gotten off work 2 hours ago. Kieran normally calls me if Nick's ever held up for any reason, so I know he didn't run my boy late.
She dialed the phone and held it up to her ear. Cody didn't say anything as she checked her own phone. There were no missed calls or messages from him. Yeah, definitely not like her Cajun OCD Malachi, who was maniacal about checking in with them.
Hey, Boo, where are you?
Charisse listened for a few minutes.
Yeah, well, Cody's here at Sanctuary. Said you're supposed to be meeting her?
She listened again before she finally sighed.
Okay. I'll tell her, but you need to make sure you stay on top of your promises. I raised you better than that, Nick. You don't keep a lady waiting. That's all kinds of wrong, and you know it. You tell someone you're going to meet them, you're there on time. You hear me? All right. Love you, Boo. See you later.
Hanging up, she slid the phone in her pocket and offered Cody a sympathetic scowl.
I'm so sorry, Cody. Nick's off with Marug. Said he forgot all about it. I don't know what's gotten into that boy lately.
Cody screwed her face up as she considered it herself.
He has been a little distracted the last couple of days.
Charisse's frown deepened.
Are you two crossed up?
No, ma'am. They hadn't even so much as passed an irritable snark at each other.
Is he having trouble at school?
No more than his normal run-ins with Stone and Mason, but everyone had trouble getting along with them. Even they got crossed up with themselves at times.
Not really. Fighting with Caleb, then?
Cody shook her head. No one fought with Caleb, as he tended to disembowel whatever annoyed him.
Well, I can't figure it, but something's been weird. I know my boy, and he ain't been the same since they questioned him about his friends.
She swallowed hard.
Maybe that's it. Maybe their deaths hit him harder than I thought. I wonder if he needs to speak to someone about it.
Yeah, that wouldn't go over well. Nick wasn't into sharing his more tender emotions with his closest friends, never mind a stranger. She'd never seen anyone more nimble at dodging questions. Except Caleb and Asheron. Only they could make Nick look like an open book.
I don't really think that's it either, Mrs. Gaucher. Pretty sure Nick would run for a door if he tried.
I guess, she whispered under her breath. It's like he's somebody else. Some days I swear I feel like there's a stranger living in my little Nicky's body. Like a pod person took him over and is staring at me as if he's never seen me before. I caught him the other day at the dorm with the weirdest look on his face, like he couldn't remember where his room was. Must be a teen boy puberty thing. He even forgot the words to his prayers at Mass. I can't remember the last time he did that.
She patted Cody on the back and smiled.
Oh, well, let's not dwell on bad things. You sit right there, and I'll bring you some of Mama Lou's famous bread pudding and an Oreo shake. That'll put a smile on your face and a hug in your belly.
Cody smiled at Charisse as she hurried off toward the kitchen. And as she saw her disappearing through the door, a memory hit her hard. One that had been buried way deep inside her. Or rather, a memory someone had restricted from her so much that she'd all but forgotten it. Yet now, with a burning clarity, she saw this restaurant and bar not as it was today, but centuries in the future. Very similar and yet very different. For one thing, Nicolette Pelletier no longer owned it. Her daughter Amy did, along with a werehunter wolf named Fang Catalacus, who'd married Amy after he and his brothers had moved their wolf pack to New Orleans. At the same time, Valerius Magnus had been assigned to town as a dark hunter. Dazed, Cody glanced around as her vision went in and out of the present and future. She saw the werehunters, who were currently in the crowded bar, the Howlers, the house band, only they were a bit older. The Pelletier Bear family, who owned it now and who sat on the Omegrion Council that ruled over Werekind, only they had merged with other fey and preternatural creatures to make a new family and home. Dev, the huge, muscled bouncer at the door, would one day marry a dark huntress named Sam, an Amazon warrior. Max, the quiet dragon who lived in the attic upstairs, would be joined by his dragon swan and their children. His brothers would leave Morgan's Fey Circle, where they currently resided, behind the veil, and move in here as well. So many changes to come. It staggered her mind. The former pirate, Rafael Santiago, would spend time here. Simon and Cassim, even the dark hunter, Kit, would become friends with the quiet werehunter tiger named Wren. And both would fight to save the Devereaux sisters from the demons out to slay them. And not all that far in the future. It would all start when Julian and Grace reunited with Kyrian. They would all play a part in changing Nick's life and setting her destiny in motion. Time swam before her eyes, coalescing into one moment. Nick, holding their infant daughter in his arms, sitting only a few feet from where she currently was. The dimpled smile on his face stole her breath as he fed her a French fry from his plate.
I wish my mother was here to see our little girl. She'd spoil her rotten.
Tears filled Cody's eyes as she saw herself dabbing at the drool on her daughter's chin.
I wish I could have met Charisse. I feel like I already know her.
She was an incredible woman, like you. Joining them at the table, Asheron paused by Nick's side to make faces at their daughter.
And how's my little angel, huh?
He asked in a falsetto.
You're keeping Daddy up at night? I hope so. Make his ears bleed for me.
Charity squealed in delighted laughter, as if she understood him. Cooing, she reached for Asheron, who took her in his arms and held her against his shoulder so that she could fist her hands in his long black hair.
So where's Aunt Tori?
Cody looked around for his wife.
"Shopping with your mother for the baby,"
he continued to speak in that high-pitched tone that kept Charity laughing while he dodged her attempts to tug at his nose ring. Cody smiled at the sight of his obvious care and tenderness.
"She loves her Uncle Ash?"
"Like her mama did, at the same age."
Asheron kissed Charity's cheek.
"Yeah."
Cody's father sighed as he came to lean over the back of Nick's seat.
"There were times when I thought my baby girl preferred you to me, brother. Made me jealous until it dawned on me that it wasn't so much that, and she couldn't tell us apart."
He winked at Cody, who laughed at her father's tisking tone.
"Now, Daddy, that's not true. I always knew you two apart."
Aside from the fact that her father kept his shorter hair their natural blonde shade, while her uncle dyed his black, the twins had different eye colors. Asheron's were swirling silver, and her father's were blue. But other than that, they were identical copies of each other. Except for one thing.
"And how is that?"